see a lot of integrating the approaches that you have seen throughout the presentations actually today and yesterday. And the idea, the basic idea is that as natural resources managers, we are dealing with extreme events. And we don't want to hand over to somebody else to say, okay, now it's a disaster, now you had to deal with it. We had to do that in a continuous fashion and deal with those. I want to introduce the organizations that I'm affiliated with, the University of Buffalo. I'm an associate professor in the geography department. We have got the National Center for Geographic Information and Analysis. So GIS, environmental modeling, are the aspects that we're looking at here. And then since about 3 years, I worked together with MCIR, a former multidisciplinary center for earthquake engineering and research, now interested in looking at multi-hazard approaches and extreme events. Also the Geohazard Center, the Geohazard Study Center that we just founded together with the geology department and maths and a lot of other social sciences actually. So when we look at the disaster happening, we had to look at the disaster management cycle. So we are not only looking at the disaster and the immediate response and recovery, but also at mitigation efforts, the risk reduction, prevention, and preparedness. So over time, if we see that as a cycle, we know that sooner or later, an extreme event will return. And when we look at the coastal situation here in southern Louisiana, we see here the coastal parishes, we see an interaction between natural land or managed, partially managed ecosystems, and then we see agro-ecosystems in the hinterland as well as infrastructure. And the question is, how is this landscape prepared? How are the communities actually prepared here to have short onset extreme events like a hurricane or a flood, as you can see here indicated with the FEMA flood map, as well as under the changing conditions of sea level rise. We have to be prepared for that. So what I'm going to present here in this presentation are a few key issues that we had to consider in building an evaluation of a resilience. And I call this the Watershed Community Resilience Index. It's an extension of a NOAA grant that I'm PI on, where we look at coastal community resilience, but that applies also for watersheds. And the watersheds brings us together in a in an area, in a defined area, where we said we were sitting in the same boat, so we had to deal with that. So the watershed is a very good idea to use to start enhancing the communication as well as putting together different approaches. So I will present a conceptual framework here. I will talk about toolkits that are based on GIS and environmental modeling that looks at quantitative and qualitative methods, looking at spatial and non-spatial data to identify scientifically defensible indicators for ecosystems and ultimately community resilience. We heard the term resilience. I will give a short review about this in my presentation. And then also the most important is, how do we implement that? How do we make people use it and make it use of this to make their decisions and see themselves within those extreme events that we will see sooner or later. So the resilience concept is a key here. And MCIR has got the main goal to enhance the resilience of communities. So when you assume an infrastructure, and that is what they looked at in earthquake engineering, is that we have got 100%. And with an extreme event, we lose basically the quality of the infrastructure. And this loss of resilience creates this resilience triangle. And the basic idea is to minimize that and enhance the community resilience so that the community is prepared for extreme events impacts. Now, if we look at the disaster management cycle and define resilience, we have got four R's. That's MCIR's four R's: robustness, rapidity, resourcefulness, and redundancy of the system. If you're interested in more details about what these are, then I can give you that after the presentation. But the idea here is to have a widespread analysis of resilience itself in terms of infrastructure. Now, it's not only the infrastructure that we have to analyze in a coastal environment, as you can see at various locations here where we've got highways and harbor system, canals running and so forth. It's also the socio-cultural resistance, as we heard it this morning in the first presentations, that we have to consider. It's the social resilience, And it's the economic resilience in addition to that, as well as the ecosystem resilience. This actually should be socio-economic resilience. So if we have those four different parts, then that is what our NOAA project is based on. And we are developing an index for the communities as well as for individuals living in this community to see how resilient are they and how do they interact with the resilience of these four different aspects. Now, in terms of ecosystems, we can look at it the same way in terms of resilience. We may have got a variability here in the natural systems. It could be a drought, it could be a wet time or anything like that. So that changes certain aspects of the ecosystem, but more or less we can also assume here a status where we say that we have got a stable and resilient ecosystems. Now, we could also have in the same way a loss of resilience and use the same approach and be trying to minimize this ecosystem resilience to the extent that we do not burden it in addition with any kind of anthropogenic changes and put pressure on the system. So system analysis is key overall, and that is the second key that I want to present. So if we look at the system analysis here to resilience, then we could in the coastal situation have a coastal hazard, we've got an infrastructure system, and we've got a system functionality. That means we are trying to represent and model hydrodynamically, for example, what is going on. So this here is the situation of a pre-event where we look at modeling and prediction, but also post-event, and we analyze with hydrodynamic modeling what's going on in this system. We also can use remote sensing to see what's the status of the natural environment. And then we can look at certain aspects in terms of evaluating the system and giving a feedback and say, what can we do in the system to make it more resilient? So we have got sort of a feedback loop here, and we've got a back loop here in front where we simulate the environment pre-event in terms of preparation to an event. And we can combine that with a higher order of resilience assessment and decision support where we bring in the four R's and the other resiliences and provide that into a decision support system. Now, overall, this continuous inflow of data and information, the continuous tap that we have out in the environment to see what is going on, is basically highlighted in those different resiliences, ecosystem and sociocultural resistance, resilience, infrastructure, social, economic. And we feed then in quantitative approaches to determine the actual level of the resiliences in these resilience models, and then combine them in the coastal community resilience index. So there is continuous feedback, even if there is not a disaster that just happened or we're looking at recovery only. We feed that in, and then we supply these continuous management decisions. And hydrodynamic models, for example, as presented just now, is a great part of this in coastal wetlands. But soil science is also the key. We know that soil sciences here, and that's introductory, Brady and Weil, we have got five crucial ecological roles. We've got soil organisms, we've got the recycling of nutrient and organic waste, the sea pool that Ratan Lal just presented, we've got the medium for plant growth, but also the system for water supply and purification that we have to take into account, and the engineering aspects. So looking at soil quality as the measure of ability of a soil to carry out ecological functions and considering certain degradations that are human-induced or they could be induced by extreme events, we can look at that resilient concept as well in the soils. And then we can see what is the resilience, what is the ability of soils to recover. And this soil is a small portion of an ecosystem that we can apply even on a landscape scale, and that's what we're trying to do here. So the resilience curve that I just showed you with the loss of resilience and the recovery is easily indicated by organic matter in the soil. As you can see here, this is agricultural soil in the Midwest. And we see that with the start of the cultivation, we basically drain the organic matter pool. And if we start putting in organic management that improves the organic matter content in the soil, we have a change in that. And that's like kind of the curve that it bounces back as you've seen in the resilience curve. So there is not an immediate loss of resilience, but there is a resilience loss over time. And those are the things that you want to look at. And it was mentioned this morning about the organic matter in the soil and oxidization, and basically loss here even on infrastructural aspects. You can see here this house in Florida and the level of soil surface that was here when the house was built just 60 years ago, and here you see the septic tank that obviously is not working anymore. So a lot of the areas where we have got water drained out have got situations like that. So natural resources management is a key here to look at. If we look at an aspect, a very complex process in soils or on soils, soil erosion is one of them, where we have got all of those interactions and where we deal with socio-economical, socio-cultural, as well as environmental and infrastructural issues. So there is that publication that actually should go back here to highlight that the Soil and Water Conservation Society did an analysis about climate change and what kind of pressure climate change has got on the system in terms of erosion as well as runoff, and looking at the pathways and the effects. So if we have got knowledge about this, then we can see and look what are changes that we have, that we experience in the United States, for example, the frequency of heavy precipitation events, particularly around the Great Lakes, on what impact will it have on the ecosystem, as well as the other systems that we talked about. So forests, agriculture, water resources, coastal areas, human health, and ecosystems were identified from USA EPA as an impact or as impacted by changes in precipitation and temperature. And Buffalo is in New York State, so I'm just bringing this up here. Over the last 100 years, we have had an increase of 20% in the precipitation. So there is more precipitation coming into that system, as well as we have got a temperature change. And the temperature change here with 10 degrees Fahrenheit plus the precipitation change may also change the ecosystem overall. And that means with this shift, we have got a shift in the resilience, and that is what we have to face. And that applies for a lot of other areas, including the coastal zone areas that are impacted, and with an additional dynamic with the sea level rise and intrusion of salt water and so forth. So the second workshop that the Soil and Water Conservation Society organized was, what kind of tools do we have to really analyze what is going on in those systems? So, and their prediction technology was the main focus. So how can we use prediction technology effectively to see what is going on in a system? This is a study that I did in Spain, and I want to just show a little bit about soil erosion in Spain and what impact a cultivation change had on the ecosystem. So the idea here that we see is that we've got precipitation throughout the year, particularly in the winter season, and then in the summer we've got a dry period, but the most intense storms, as you can see here, energy intensity appears from less frequent storms sometime during the summer and at the beginning of the winter precipitation period. So the question is now, what kind of a rotation do you choose, and what kind of residues and what kind of conditions will your agroecosystem be when these heavy storms that energy intensity comes in? And these are Russell factors that are indicated here, soil loss ratios and so forth. And based on the residue that is left from beans and sunflowers and chickpeas, we can see that at the beginning of the rotation here, after we had chickpeas, bean, and sunflower, we have got different residues and a different protection of the soil. And those are kind of aspects that we had to use to feed resilience models. How can we look what is going on and check the status? We can look obviously at charts that are provided by farmers and so forth, but in the time of remote sensing, we can do that also in continuously measuring certain key parameters that we identified. Within watersheds, we have people that live upstream, we have got people that live downstream, we have got on-site interest and off-site interest, and that basically comes together in finding out what are these target values that we had to define. We have had the tolerable soil loss in terms of on-site assessment, but also the TMDL values that are propagated by EPA would be an example for an interest of downstream issues that we want to look at. This is a software, an interface, a geospatial interface that I created based on the web model. The Water Erosion Prediction Project And here we can look at the different soil losses that appear in watersheds and really specify where can we change something at the smaller scale and how can we evaluate the impacts at the larger scale. So this is just a small watershed, but we can also easily feed that in into a larger watershed if we are interested in larger areas. Now, but looking at best management practice, now we can compare how does conservation tillage compare to conventional tillage. We can do 100-year simulations and so forth and then see pattern where we have got deposition here with those yellow areas in comparison to the green, the accepted, and red, the tolerable soil losses within a watershed. Now, what you see here is also the GeoWeb, the interface that I created, that is used for the disaster management cycle in the most efficient way. And the idea is here that we look at post-fire rehabilitation of forests and see the mitigation efforts that are done here, but we also can do fuel load reduction so that we mitigate the problem of the fire. So the model approach here, you can really easily fit into this disaster management cycle and continuously analyze what is going on in the system. And here, the largest fire that we had in 2005, GeoWeb was basically used by the Forest Service as well as it's used by several other agencies here to predict erosion in forests. So to come to the last part in here is mitigation is really continuous monitoring, measuring, modeling, and management efforts that we had to combine in those geospatial tools to allow to make decisions. And that means we need an integrated geoinformation management. That is the last key that I have here. Communication is the key. How can all these people that presented in the session and that we face with all the stakeholders and how can they outreach and how can we get feedback about what to do and how to manage landscapes. So communication is key. And in my class and in the research projects, I developed a tool that allows us to communicate those issues. And the Geospatial Project Management tool basically tells us about source data, valid data, input data for models, output analysis, output validation, and a project report at the end that gives an overview. So since we are dealing here in a hurricane session, I bring another impact of hurricanes, and that's increased precipitation in inland watersheds as an example. This is a storm that happened on June 27th in Madison County and that caused a lot of debris flows. So in the first aspect, we try to monitor what is going on. This is NEXRAD data. You see the small watershed here, and you see the increased precipitation. If it would have long time enough, you would see a highly red spot or even the purple spot showing up here in this watershed based on the precipitation there. But if you analyze that, then we have had 350 to 700 millimeters in 5 hours. That is a lot of rain. And that was obviously not very healthy for the ecosystem there. And question is if it would have been resilient anyhow enough, even if we would have done something. However, I just want to make the point here in terms of the data processing. So we combine information that we have from remote sensing and bring that back and bring it back into the community. As you can see here, there are a few houses down here, there's a topographic map, you've got the digital elevation model. Question is how is that data processed, what is the purpose of it? So if you change if you transform information that you gathered and you make it for a certain use, you transform that information and you need to keep track of it what you're doing, because at the end your management decision will be based on, for example, algorithms that you process your input data with for models, for example. So here you've got the erosion that is taking place and the debris flow as a consequence that goes down and has an impact on certain infrastructure. Here again, the view on this watershed. And then you see how can we, how do we know that we are doing the right things? So you compare here the mapped debris flows with your model simulation and you can figure out how well you did. This is an aerial photograph after the impact and you see certain debris flows here going through the forest. So what does it do? The geospatial project management looks at these six fundamental scaling steps that transform information from the observation of real processes and process pattern to put it into digital information, to use that digital information to quantify it, put it into a database with other geospatial data, to feed models analyze, and a fourth step to analyze what is going on and to compare it at the assessment scale where we need this information to make decisions and validate it with observations that we have. And then provide this information continuously to decision makers, as it's indicated here. This is not in that area, it's a different area, but this is basically the outreach component in here, so that people can ask, so what is what kind of algorithm was used for the data to be processed and so forth, and what kind of impact does it have on my management decision, and what kind of impact does it have on my resilience that I have, and so forth. So people need to be empowered to do that in a very straightforward and not in a complex way, and the geospatial project management tool is something that combines all these efforts together and where we can outreach and tell watershed community about their resilience. So to conclude this here, the watershed community resilience and index approach will allow interdisciplinary teams to continuously monitor dynamic environmental processes, measure spatiotemporal properties, model natural processes, variability and extremes, and manage geospatial data to effectively communicate and assess ecosystems, and ultimately community resilience against multiple hazards. And all these components that are in there, if it's that model or another model, that all can be exchanged, but the idea is really to communicate the most relevant information. Thank you very much.